You are now listening to the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. As always, I am your host, Daniel Lee of Photos by DLEE. Today, we're going to be talking about street photography tips, what my personal tips are for when I shoot street, and going over some news and personal updates as always, which we will get into first. So I tried to go out maybe a week or two ago, just not long after the last podcast, to try and shoot, you know, the autumn fall colors, but I pretty much failed. I went to the Botanical Gardens here in Sydney. I went with my 85mm f2. I didn't really see that many fall colors or anything that I could really say caught my eye. Not like that time I went to the Blue Mountains during autumn. That one was really good, but I ended up getting distracted because from Botanical Gardens, you can sort of walk a loop which leads to Circular Quay or Quay. There's a called Circular Quay. Once I got there, I pretty much, or even on the way there, I got more into shooting street photography. So I got a bit distracted. Didn't really come back with many nature shots, but I did come back with some good street shots. So nearly finished that post, so I'll be able to post them very soon. Did have a lot of fun. Really need to make more time for my photos. You know, all I do every day is just work, exercise, and play games and watch shows. I really need to put photography more in there. It's just a matter of, yeah, prioritizing it. I also, as of recording, you know, the previous weekend, I got engaged. So been with my girlfriend for nearly 11 years now. Obviously, just boyfriend and girlfriend, even though we live together, we're getting married in a few months. So we had to get engaged. So yeah, I managed to propose. Of course, she said yes, and we're engaged. So that was good. I put a post on Photos by DLEE, just of me holding her hand with the ring. That's the photo I'd always planned to take when we eventually got engaged. So now is finally the time to do that. And last but not least, it's sort of partially news about personal updates. Looks like I will be selling my EFM gear, all of it, because the EFM mount looks to be dead. So supposedly on May 24th, there's going to be an announcement that the Canon EOS R7 is going to be announced along with an R10. The R10 appears to be, you know, like your M-series camera, but RF mount. It's a few very generic, you know, zooms that are being announced with it apparently as well. Whether or not, you know, this is Canon rumors rated at CR3, which is their like pretty much, you know, confirmed facts almost. Whether or not it's a good camera, that'll be another thing. I personally don't see myself getting it, mainly because I, you know, promised to myself no more APS-C gear, only full frame gear. So yeah, because of that, it won't be for me. I don't think I can sell my M50 that soon though, because I do need it. When we get married in June, I need two cameras. I need one for photos, one for video. So because of that, you know, I need the two cameras. Once that happens, then I can sell it easily. But otherwise, until that happens, I'm stuck with it. Otherwise, that's it for my personal updates. Keeping it short this week. Honestly, with the engagement and all that kind of stuff, I didn't really have time on the weekend to go into as much detail or really do anything but prepare for that. So yeah, otherwise, first piece of news. DJI have announced the Mini Pro 3. So this is an all new drone weighing it in at only 249 grams, which is insane. It's got a 1.3 inch sensor that captures 48 megapixel photos and 4K video up to 60 frames per second. Due to its weight, it's policy friendly in many countries that are very restrictive in terms of drones and, you know, maximum weight. DJI equipped the Mini 3 with a camera that says creates pro quality content. It uses a 1.3 inch CMOS sensor with a dual native ISO, a feature that company points out is generally only available on cinema cameras and a few dedicated mirrorless cameras. It has an f1.7 aperture. The camera rotates 90 degrees, which allows pilots to orientate the camera to shoot photos and videos in portrait orientation without needing to zoom, crop, or create multi-image stitch. If zoom is desired, the Mini 3 can digitally zoom 2x in 4K, 3x in 2.7K, and 4x in full HD. It does have object avoidance, and extended battery life of 34 minutes. The DJI Mini Pro 3 is the first mini lineup to integrate that object detection and focus track, or APAS and focus track. The Mini Pro 3 will be available for $669 without a controller and is the most affordable option for those who already have a compatible model to control the drone. To receive a DJI RC N1 controller with the drone, it'll cost you $759, and the DJI Mini 3 can be paired with the new DJI RC controller for $909. Photos don't look too bad, to be honest. They look decent, and for the price, it's very cheap. To me, it'd be the type of one you would get just to play around, just to give it a try. I seen someone in one comment say that it's pretty much a smartphone sensor on this kind of thing, which did honestly look like a pretty fair comparison. You're not going to get the same quality you would get from the Mavic Air or Mavic Pros from this, but for the price, you know, it's just something good, something fun to give a try, something you don't have to worry. You know, like they say, when you get your first car, you're always going to have that car crash with your first car. Well, maybe this could be like a drone. You're always going to crash that first drone. So why not get something cheap like this, get used to flying, get the practice in, and then move up to something good once you destroy this one. Next up is TT Artisan 50mm f0.95 APS-C UltraFast Prime for Fuji X Sony E-mount cameras. So TT Artisan has announced it's adding two new mount options to its 50mm f0.95 APS-C. Now, in addition to the Canon EOS M mount, Canon RF L mount, Micro Four Thirds and Nikon Z mount camera system, Fuji X and Sony E mount, which is the APS-C users, get their hands on this affordable UltraFast Prime as well. It's a fully manual lens, 75mm full frame equivalent, 8 elements and 6 groups with a 10 bladed aperture diaphragm, a 57cm or I believe 19.7 inch minimum focusing distance, and it uses a 58mm front filter thread. It's unchanged from their other lens mounts in terms of designs and all that. It's 411 grams and each lens comes with a lens cap, soft carry pouch and a cleaning cloth. The images on this lens are actually very nice. I like the rendering. The bokeh looks really nice. Obviously, you know, as I mentioned, I want to sell my AFM gear, so I wouldn't be buying something like this. But just for simple still life, food, stuff you don't need movement from and you're happy to use a manual lens for, this lens does look really good. Interesting that they do list Canon RF, because, you know, with the RF APS-C camera coming out, you can use it on there like normal rather than it going into 1.6 crop mode like it would on the R6 or the R5 or the other two, the R and the RP. Otherwise, if something interests you, maybe check it out. Now, here I come to butcher a name. The next story is Xingyao Optical Brighton Star 60mm f2.8 lens for full-frame mirrorless cameras has been previewed. So this is a second-generation lens. It's fully manual as well. It's constructed of 12 elements in 11 groups, has an aperture range of f2.8 through f22, and has a minimum focusing distance of 30 centimeters. The lens is coming to Canon RF, Leica L, Nikon Z, and Sony E-mount camera systems. Both the aperture and focus rings feature a knurled pattern, I don't even know what that is, and offer distance markings. It's unclear at this time whether the aperture is clicked or unclicked, but past Brighton Star lenses have featured clicked aperture rings. It's expected to ship in June 2022 for around $280 on Amazon, which previous set lenses. Didn't include any image previews, but I'm sure we'll see more once comes to a closer announcement. But if you weren't interested in the 60mm f2.8 Canon lens, or you use, you know, Nikon, Sony, L-mount bodies, Panasonic, Leica, that kind of stuff, this could be a great option for you, because to me, I still think 60mm is a great focal length for any kind of cityscapes, landscapes, that kind of stuff. How much I'll use mine when I go travel next, which I'm going to Melbourne soon, how good that'll work for that, who knows, but I guess we'll soon find out. So that is pretty much it for the news, very quick today. So what we're going to do is we're going to hop over to our main topic. So street photography, I would say, is one of my favorite genres. It's not the easiest one. Some people feel like it can be a bit difficult to do. If you look at sort of a very general definition of it, if you look in Google, it's a genre of photography that records everyday life in a public place. The very publicness of the setting enables a photographer to take candid pictures of strangers, often without their knowledge. Now, it's not easy because, as you know, that part, candid pictures of strangers, you never know how people are going to react to you taking photos of them. You know, you see in the news all the time, people maybe innocent, maybe not, taking photos that they probably shouldn't be, or potentially people claim they shouldn't be, and they get into some sort of beef because of that. I remember back when I was living in Perth, there was a situation in the news where some guy was just doing street photography and took a photo of a couple, and then the guy in the couple took offense to that and try to hit the guy or something like that. But it does happen from time to time, so it is something you have to be mindful of when you're doing street photography. There's also, you know, a lot of street photographers out there, a lot of certain rules around it. you know, unwritten rules, depending on what style and what genre you go for. You know, you got different styles. You got the cinematic street photography, and you got the more in your face type of street photography that people like Eric Kim, I can't remember who he based it off, does, where they pretty much just go right up into someone's face and take a photo and flash them. Not my type of street photography, but everything varies a lot. There's like subgenres within the genre. I believe I've covered something very similar in the past, but I thought, you know, just updated for 2022. So I go over some topics, or not some topics, some suggestions on tips of what you can do when you shoot street photography. So the first tip I have would be, don't follow the unwritten rules around focal length. So a lot of people say you have to use something like a 35 or 50. You know, it has to be a wide angle. You want that big depth of field, that kind of stuff. Don't listen to that. Do whatever creates the art that you want to create. You know, which, as I said, majority of my street photos are with a 85 millimeter. Some are with 35. I swap between the two. You'll find there's a lot of 85 people who use 85 millimeter. You may be unfamiliar with them if you shoot Sony. If you don't shoot Sony, sorry, but Jason Vong, for example, he uses 85 millimeter a lot, and he just released an excellent little hour-long street photography guide with a Professor Hines as well, another street photographer who I believe is based in New York. Their stuff is really great. You should check that out, because they pretty much use longer focal lengths as well. A while ago, you know, when I first started using Flickr, it was cinematic street photography where you had to make it look like a movie scene. And because of that, people were using 85, 135, that kind of stuff. That subgenre was really good back then. I don't do it anymore, but you know, it was fun to shoot at that time. Pretty much you crop it to 16:9, add a few black bars, make it look like an actual, someone just paused the movie. That was the main goal of that. But each focal length you use can give a different look. If you're looking for something, you know, more wider, 35mm can really great and give a different, very different look to 85mm. And don't think that you have to stop down. A lot of people say you have to, but shallow depth of fields do have their place. Even if you're shooting at something like 85 or 135mm wide open, if you frame it very wide, it has a very, very unique look to it. Because you get that slight shallow depth of field, but you also get the context of the background. So it definitely has its place, and it's definitely worth giving a try. The next tip I would say is try to tell or capture a story. So, you know, a lot of people will often default to just someone sitting there on their phone, reading their phone, because it's easiest. They're distracted. They're in another world. They won't notice you taking a photo of them. But at the same time, it's not something interesting. Not the only really story you're telling is that they're on their phone. Obviously, it's not easy to always find moments happening, but you'll find the more you just sort of get engrossed in the city, really just take notice of your surroundings, you'll start to see stuff you wouldn't usually notice. I do honestly find that busier cities are better for this. For example, when I went to Hong Kong, that was amazing for street photography. You'll find there's always something happening no matter what time of the night of the day. You know, that life that's happening in the street is always so interesting. An example of telling a story. So here in Sydney, which is coming up as well, we have a thing called Vivid, where they light up the city in all different colors, lighting patterns. It's like a big festival we used to have every single year, but stopped due to COVID. I was there one year, and I had my 35mm with me, and I was just, you know, watching everything. And then there's sort of like a stairs that go down, and I was on one side of the stairs, and on the other side of the stairs, there was a couple, and they're just sort of looking at each other and then hugging. And as they were hugging, there's all these lights just flowing up behind them like lines in the sky. It's part of the exhibit, but it just lined up perfectly. So I took a photo, and that was, still today, probably one of my favorite street photography images that I've ever captured. You know, if you walk around the city, you'll see all different kinds of stuff, especially when it's busier. Seeing people doing someone's wedding gown and wedding makeup on a bench, you know, that made a great street moment. You see, you know, although you may not see it, you know, see someone proposing, that could be a great street moment. You just have to look for these moments, look for these stories, and sort of try tell them. I remember one another street photographer of mine that sort of comes to mind here in Sydney anyway, three guys walking along, they look like they're out, you know, some Bucks night or something, the way they're dressed and that. They're walking along in unison, and then I'm just walking towards you. It sort of shows, you know, that they're having fun, men on a mission kind of thing. So you just need to look for those stories and give them, make sure they have context in that. Don't just sort of take a photo of someone, you know, walking away from you. It's not, unless, you know, you can see them walking away or even walking towards you, holding a bag of groceries, you know, it gives a bit of story. They're, you know, going home, just got their groceries, or by themselves having to carry everything. You get amazing stories like that. It's just a matter of actually really sitting there, taking the time to take everything in and find these moments. And on that topic of, you know, faces not backs, it can be intimidating, but you know, trying to find faces of people rather than shoot their back. So what one tip I'll give is what I do a lot. So say hypothetically, you got a spot where you know the background is good and then people are coming towards you. You know, typically you would think as the person comes close to you, you lift your camera up, you take a photo of them, you put it back down. You'll find if you do that, they tend to look at you wondering why you're taking a photo of them. What I like to do is if I know that person's coming towards me, I'll hold my camera up looking through my viewfinder even before they're even anywhere near me, and I'll just hold that pose. So when they walk into the frame, boom, take my shots. And then when they walk past, I continue holding there. So when they see that, they think and assume that I'm trying to get a photo of something else, and that, you know, that's why I'm still taking a photo after they walk past. I've had a lot of people, I notice I can see them out of the eye. I take my shot and they're sort of like walking past and look back and see me still on the camera. And they just straight away think, oh yeah, I'm still taking a photo. That is the absolute easiest way I've done it. So that way it looks very inconspicuous, that kind of stuff, you know. And obviously these are proper, you know, normal people walking, some kind of story, not like something bad. And in terms of that, you know, practice makes perfect. The more you do it, the more you get used to it, the less you'll be intimidated. And in all honesty, depending on where you are is how easy it is to take these kind of images. You'll find in certain places, if you took a full frontal photo of someone's face, you know, up close, they may get angry. Whereas I know in Hong Kong, I would just stand there, and when the person walks like near me, I take the photo. They don't say anything. They might just look at you, but that's it. They don't do a thing. Whereas here, it's, you know, not, I don't think you really do that. People probably try and get into a fight with you, but it really depends on your location. So have to really assess where you are, what you're doing, get used to where you're shooting locations, and that'll really help as well. And there's another tip that I learned quite a long time ago. This one is sort of a bit more dependent on your sort of where you're shooting, what kind of stuff you want to shoot as well. I followed a guy on Flickr, I can't remember his name, Alfred something, but he gave this tip. That's not my tip that I ever came up with. He mentioned that often what you're best doing is finding a good spot and focusing on that. So, you know, technically we'll walk, a lot of people when they do street photography, they'll walk all around the city trying to find something to photograph. But rather than walking around trying to find something, let the moments come to you. So in regard to that, so say I find the spot, think of like, you know, really good background. So along, you know, leading lines of trees, you know, certain places I know in Japan, even where they got, I can't remember the place, I think it's in Tokyo, where you got a long line of trees, especially during autumn, it looks amazing. That kind of stuff, perfect for photos. So you just really need to get, you got your spot there, you just need to find the moment or the subject. So what you do is you can focus on that one subject. So say you want, there's a bench that is perfect, just absolutely perfect composition, everything. Focus on that bench. You just sit there, relax, wait till someone comes there. Once that person sits down on that bench, boom, then you take the photo. Or if it's a walkway, you got a perfect crossing that has some lights behind it that has the most beautiful composition, whatever. There's two ways you can do it. If you're using, say, even a manual focusing lens or anything, you can technically focus on that spot, wait for that person to walk into the spot and be in focus and then capture the image. Or you can just track them, you know, stay in that one spot, wait till they walk in the frame, track them and take the photo that way. There's so many different ways you can go about it, but you just have to be creative. And it's, you know, like they said, it's about finding those spots, spots that work for you and spots that look best, sort of thing. Otherwise, that is my main tips for street photography. I'd say the last one, you know, confidence. The more confidence you have, the more you won't be nervous. Obviously, the more you'll be able to focus just on creating art rather than worrying about, you know, is this person going to get angry? This person going to curb stomp me if I, the wrestling term, don't worry. If someone, you know, going to get angry if I take a photo of them up. Just remember to be respectful. If someone does come, you take a photo, someone requests you to delete it, it's not worth getting your camera broken, you get in a fight. Just delete the photo, you know? Otherwise, just go out there, enjoy yourself, build up your confidence, practice makes perfect, and shoot as much as you can and experiment. Try and take both cameras with you. Otherwise, that's pretty much it for this podcast. A short one this week, this fortnight, sorry. I'll be back in a few weeks' time. Not sure what the topic will be yet. I usually decide in the last minute. So if you do have a topic, please suggest one to me. It's something I can do. Otherwise, if you'd like to hear more episodes of this, make sure to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts, sorry, Spotify, Google Podcasts, if you're on Stitcher as well. I think most of you just use RSS feed, which is, if that works for you, that works for you. Otherwise, if you want to hear more episodes, you can go to thephotographyenthusiast.com. If you want to see my photography, I post mainly on Twitter and Flickr. The links are on my website, which is photosbydoe.com. Otherwise, thank you very much for listening. Take care, stay safe, and keep shooting. See ya.